The following is a presentation from Life in the Heartland. Working to increase resident awareness of operations within Alberta's industrial heartland, we communicate with the community on key areas related to industry projects and development in the region. This industrial zoned land covers 582 square kilometers northeast of Edmonton and is home to over 40 companies producing and processing oil, gas, petrochemicals, and advanced manufacturing. With the continued commitment from industry, municipalities, and local organizations, Life in the Heartland provides information directly to those living in Canada's largest hydrocarbon processing region. Tune in to In the Zone to learn more about what's happening in the Heartland, where we discuss topics of interest with the industry experts.
Welcome to In the Zone. I'm Sheena Fitzpatrick, Community Engagement Director for Life in the Heartland. I'm pleased to welcome two special guests today, Tammy Swass, Executive Director for the Alberta Plastics Recycling Association, and Dan Zembel, President for PolyAg Recycling. Today we'll be exploring what exactly the circular economy is, as well as discussing the current plastics recycling processes in our region, some exciting initiatives happening in the sector, and where we go from here. Hi Tammy and Dan, welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Good morning.
Thank you.
So Tammy, as the Executive Director for the Alberta Plastics Recycling Association, can you share with us a little bit about APRA and what they do?
For sure. So the association has been around now for over 30 years. We were formed initially as a stewardship organization by the resin manufacturers, and we continue to do stewardship work today in the form of advancing a plastic circularity in the province, which I'll define and talk a little bit more about throughout our discussion today, and advance different recycling projects. So we now have members, processors across the plastics value chain. These are recyclers, processors, manufacturers, municipalities, other nonprofits. And so we work with a number of different organizations to make that happen. We do a lot of advocacy work on different policies in the federal and provincial governments that affect our members and plastics manufacturing, as well as processing and recycling. And we help connect members of the public as well as businesses with opportunities to collect and recycle their plastics. And so really our vision is a sustainable plastic circular economy where post-use plastic stays out of the environment and in the economy.
Awesome. Thanks so much. And I'm really looking forward to discussing more about exactly what that economy is, what that means, and the progress that's happening there. So Dan, who is PolyAg Recycling and what do they do?
PolyAg Recycling, we've been around for about 3 years. Two partners, Damian Flagel and Brad Wilson and myself, got involved when Alberta put together a bit of a pilot program for ag plastics. And we saw an opportunity. We collectively have about 35 years in the waste and recycling industry combined. And we put up a processing plant in Bashaw, Alberta. We looked at locations throughout central and south and a little bit north Alberta, and found that Bashaw was a good centralized location in the grain belt, in one of the major grain belt in Alberta, and also reasonably close to Saskatchewan, which is our other main material inputs. So right now we do mostly grain bags, and we take those grain bags and we unroll them, we shred them, we screen them, screen the material to get the grain and dirt out, and then we wash the material, dry it, melt it or extrude it into a pelletizer. Make those pellets are then packaged and sold into the market. And our role in circular economy, and that's kind of where we're going, is we're trying to get that material back into ag plastics, which we've had some recent very positive successes in. But that's our main. We employ about 10 to 12 people. Depending on the shifting, we run a 24-hour shift. And that material is then made, like I said, into a variety of products that we can talk about.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing. So both of your respective organizations have a focus on reintroducing or finding new and responsible ways to recycle different plastics and to keep them out of the environment and in the economy. So that's a perfect segue into the first topic that I wanted to discuss today, which is the circular economy. So what does that mean, and what exactly is circular economy?
Yeah, I can start with this one, Sheena, and jump in here. And I think it's a relatively new idea. And so it can, I think we end up in a scenario where it can mean something different to different people. And I think it's important that we try to define what it is, and so that we're all working towards the same goals and targets. Essentially, right now, we have very much, in almost all cases, a very linear economy. So we buy something, we take it, we use it, we dispose, or we may recycle it. But that still ends up, in the end, ends up in a landfill. It ends up as essentially what we would define as waste material. And so even if we're able to recycle something a couple times, it still shifts and moves down the line in a linear way. And the circular economy is a way to rethink our system, rethink how we are currently processing, using, managing materials, and try to start from the beginning. So design materials to be recycled, design materials to be reused, try to reduce waste at the start as much as possible, and think about that entire process. So we're starting to engage more manufacturers and more producers in discussing what happens at the end of life of that material, so that potentially that material can be used to remanufacture new products, be used back in their services. And it shifts our overall thinking just in terms of the system in general into things like sharing models, reuse models, different opportunities to reduce the amount of material that's in the system overall. And so one example is just the potential of the circular economy is in a study done by Deloitte that estimated there's approximately $8 billion worth of plastic that could be captured and used in the economy as opposed to ending up in the landfill, in the environment, and that sort of thing. So there's huge economic potential. There's a lot of environmental potential. We're seeing a lot of great initiatives starting and taking place in Europe, led by the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, led by a number of cities and municipalities that are taking steps to try to advance the circular economy in their communities. And even locally within the industrial heartland, there's starting to be some examples of the circular economy. One of them is from Strathcona County that has just recently reopened the Hodgepodge Lodge Reuse Center. And it's a great opportunity to help provide residents with that opportunity to kind of rescue and reuse items as opposed to seeing them end up in the landfill or just as waste. So that's our example. And as an association, we're working with companies like Dan and others, other members that are doing great work along these lines to try to take that plastic that maybe otherwise would have just kind of moved down the line to other markets, other locations, to try to keep it within the circular economy here in Alberta. And I think Dan will talk a bit about that, but it is a really exciting opportunity for us.
Great. Thanks so much. So Dan, yeah, I'd love to hear more about kind of your perspective on it.
Yeah, when we started, we thought this was a recycling thing, and that was circular economy. But in what we quickly realized, most of our material initially we shipped offshore. It went to China, Malaysia, India, to those locations, was blended with other products, and we never saw them again. And we believed, you know, it was back into the economy. But as we developed our company, we moved into a North America market, and we were able to work. It takes a lot more effort to make it truly circular, but our ultimate goal was to take egg film and put it back into egg film. That's the highest level, I believe, that you can get with recycling and plastics. But so we are now seeing that the products are a higher value product, and they're put back into, they're not downcycled, which is a common way of recycling. And you know, it's one step away from going to the landfill sort of thing. You make a dumb product, if you will, or a product that is kind of on a one way, a very linear So we've been able to take that, and that's been our goal more recently, is to keep it in a very circular perspective. And we've had good successes with some local companies in Edmonton and area to take that material back into an ag film or a weeping tile or those products. That ultimately is what's going to, and you can't blend it in 100%, but what you'll do is you'll blend our product in at, you know, 25 or anything from 10 to 35% blended in with virgin. So you can reuse it numerous times and keep you reusing it. So, you know, what becomes a grain bag might be, you know, become a silage bag, which then, you know, gets recycled back into plastics and back into the film again. So you can do that numerous times.
Right. So it's more of a focus on upcycling versus downcycling. So we talked a bit about the different benefits of this, both environmentally and economically, as Tammy mentioned. But what are some of the barriers that currently exist to achieving this circular economy, either locally as well as in Canada?
Well, from our perspective, and I'll let Tammy jump in with a more broad perspective, but our challenges were on the front end, keeping the product unmixed. So not throwing everything into it. So for example, shrink wrap doesn't work well with mixing with our product. So we need to make sure that that product is as clean as possible, not necessarily dirty clean, you know, that not that type of clean, but more unmixed. So we don't mix hard plastics with soft. We don't even mix different types like polypropylene with polyethylene. Ours is a polyethylene plant, so we only accept polyethylene film. So there's a bit of work to keep it good on the front end so that we produce a consistent, high-quality product on the back end. And then on the back end, the challenge is to get companies to use a recycled material. I mean, it's similar to where paper and cardboard was, you know, 20 years ago. People didn't think that white paper that had some recycled content would work well in their printers and their and that. And now it's pretty much, it is the way that, you know, most paper is used, has recycled content. That is starting in plastics and is starting to grow. And some of the initiatives that are coming down the pipe from the different levels of government are encouraging that. So that, you know, that you look for recycled content in the end use plastic. So you got to have both the front end to do a better job of keeping that material clean and on the back end of buying that recycled product and encouraging that activity.
Great. And Tammy, you know, with the work that APRA is doing, what are the barriers that you see that exist here in Alberta? And like I said, in Canada as well.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what Dan touched on, that the piece on demand. So we have a small, relatively small population in Alberta and in Canada, and we don't have a lot of manufacturing operations or the opportunity to use a lot of recycled content. So it's relying on the businesses that are already manufacturing items and already working in the space to really take that innovation and be able to incorporate that recycled content into their materials. And to look for new opportunities for manufacturing here domestically. And we also have a few, as Dan mentioned, some of the policies coming down federally for percentages of recycled content. That will help, right? If companies are required to use a certain percentage, we will eventually get there through innovation and through design. And the other piece of that is also just... working on building those markets, working on building those economies of scale. So if we can put in programs like extended producer responsibility, where the producers have that management of the material all the way from the start of the design of the packaging all the way through to the end of life, then they have control over that and they know what they're producing and they know what should essentially come back to them. And then they can plan to use that material in their manufacturing of the next round of products. So it really is, I think, about some of those economies of scale, collaboration, I think just awareness as companies learn more about opportunities and different sustainability initiatives. There's just a growing demand and a growing interest in how we can advance these different circular economy initiatives.
Great. So as we're talking about these different processes and, like you said, awareness and things that are coming into place, it kind of brings me to think about what our current recycling processes are, even just, you know, on that local level, but as well as an individual level or a household level. And I believe that recycling rules and these processes vary not only from like province to province, but municipality to municipality, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So how does that impact then our recycling as a whole?
Yeah, so we're working to change that, but you're right. Our current state is one where, in Alberta, at least, where every municipality is in charge of waste and recycling services. And so when people call and ask, oh, I have this item or this bucket or this barrel, I'm curious if it can be recycled. And my answer is almost everything can be recycled. It's whether there's a market for it and whether there's a current system in place to collect and process that plastic and that just recyclables or materials in general. And so that's where within the province it's a challenge, right? If you're in Calgary, they're accepting different materials than in Strathcona County, than in other places. And it's because it's sort of based on their own assessment and market assessment of what they can take and what they can market to be recycled. And so it can be very confusing for the consumer. And I was just on a webinar just before this about the Golden Design Rules, which is kind of one step previous in the chain of manufacturing, where producers are looking at how they can design their products to be recyclable in the first place. So I think we have to take a step back and look at the wider, bigger picture, starting with producers, starting with manufacturers, give our consumers materials that can actually be recyclable and that there's a demand and the ability to physically recycle them, and then move through the system from there and communicate and educate the consumer on how to participate in that system. And again, extended producer responsibility is one way that other provinces across Canada have seen success in this, in rolling out a system across the province, and that's coming in Alberta too. And if we get a chance to discuss that a bit later in our discussion, I think that might be of interest to your listeners.
Tammy, on that note, do you think that EPR is going to increase the harmonization across Alberta and across Canada so that, you know, there is more consistency on what products are recycled and aren't?
I do think so. And I think that's the hope and the goal, looking to other jurisdictions. So Canada, when we started this, in some provinces are almost 10 years ahead of Alberta, we were looking to Europe, and they had EPR and they had seen those consistencies build within Europe. Now Alberta looks to provinces like BC, and they really have seen that, I guess, harmonization, as you say, Dan, with materials that are able to be recycled, and just the increased ability to capture and recycle that plastic back into new products as well. So yes, I think it will take some organization and some time for implementation, but I ultimately do think that we've chosen this policy because it works and has proved to work. And I think there will be challenges, but I think overall it will help Alberta really build our infrastructure, build our ability to capture more materials and grow from there.
That all sounds so interesting, and it's great to see that we are looking to other provinces or other countries. Like you said, a lot of this work is coming from examples that have been modeled in Europe and processes that have been going on for a really long time. So it is optimistic, I guess, that we can get there. It may take some time, but we'll get there. As you mentioned, all products or most products can be recycled if that infrastructure is there, that market is there. But just thinking of it, like I said, on that individual level, and people are curious or they're not sure what can be recycled and can't, there are some plastics that can't be recycled. Why is that? Like one plastic versus another, you know, whether it's your milk carton or, you know, just a little piece of plastic that your food was wrapped in. Just what is the difference there as to why those different types of plastics can or can't be recycled?
Yeah, and I can let Dan jump in on this too, because as he was saying earlier, he has firsthand experience of not being able to mix plastics within his processing facility and things like that. But it comes down to a few things. Many people don't know that there are thousands of types of plastics. So even though the resins labeled are 1 to 7, it's still sort of like I compare it to a recipe for bread, right? Everyone has their own unique recipes. Some have different ingredients. So even though it's bread, it could have hundreds of different types of ingredients. And so this makes it challenging, or makes it what the challenge is, I guess, for recycling the plastic is on that ingredients and the different types of plastic that exists. Contamination is another thing. So when I talk about contamination in plastics recycling, I mean both contamination between plastics. So you can't generally, as a rule, recycle different types of plastics together because they have different melt points, different characteristics, different properties, and contamination with other materials. So you might have a package that is layered with an aluminum and a plastic, or layered with a laminate and a plastic, or food residue, or things like that. And so that poses a challenge within our recycling system to have a clean source of material. And I had a really good example, again, from this webinar that I was on this morning, when talking about recycled content, is 80% of a plastic good enough? And the example that was given by the folks from the Packaging Association of Canada was, if someone gave you a bag that had 80% flour and said, okay, here, make a cake with this, and you're going, well, what's in the other 20, what's the other 20%? And you kind of get a shake of the head, or I'm not sure. It's really challenging then for someone to take and use that and be able to remanufacture with it. So there's a lot of work that our members do through technology, through sorting processes and things like optical sorters that allow them to separate for different types of plastic and still maintain really high levels of quality of that material to be used again and to be recycled. But the reality is there's thousands of types of products and packaging on the markets, and that's what really poses a challenge to move forward as an entire system and be able to gain that traction, right, to recycle as much as we can. I'm sure Dan has a lot to add to what I just said because he's actually practicing this daily.
Yeah, one of the pulling it back to what your earlier comments were, Tammy, about design, and that's ultimately where you should start. And that is, for example, making the cap and the label the same plastic as the container. I mean, if you have a HDPE cap and a different type of container, maybe an LDPE, and you might have a paper label or another plastic type of label, all three of those plastics on the same container, they're all individually recyclable. But when you throw them all together, now you've got a sorting challenge, or a challenge that when you blend those all together, you come up with you downgrade the end product a bit. Or composite plastics. I mean, plastics have been very valuable in our society, but as you mix more and more different types of plastics, and plastics with fiberglass, or plastics with metal, as Tammy mentioned, it makes it less recyclable and less, you know, and more likely that it will be disposed of in a landfill. So there is a bit of a movement, and it really happened with the beverage containers and such, that a lot of the plastic pop bottles and such, they're now starting to make the label, the cap, and the pop bottle itself out of the same material so that it can be recycled together. I don't remember back in the day, we used to have to take the caps off all our bottles when we took it to the bottle depot. Now they're making you do that a lot less because the material is one type of material. So we see that across just about any type. And we focused on grain bags because it was one type of plastics. There's 8 manufacturers in the world, 8 or 10 in that neighborhood. And they all use a similar recipe, which makes it a much easier product to recycle because there's small variations, and someone might use a little bit more UV protection or that, or more stretch or whatever, but they're pretty consistent across the board. And what we have found is our end user customers are demanding that consistency. They want to see the same pellet, so the same inputs into their process, you know, 1 month to the next and 1 year to the next, so they don't have to adjust their, otherwise you'd be dialing, you know, adjusting your dials constantly to, for these different melt indexes or temperatures and stuff.
Right. So as these new methods of creating these products and incorporating that consistency is coming into place, and we talked a bit about some new policies, like the extended producer responsibility, what does all of this mean? Like, where do you see that we're headed?
I think putting the responsibility back on the producer, and if you put all three of those words together, it is the producer that is responsible for the costs and the end of life of that product. You'll start to see that push some of the design to make it easier to recycle or make it easier to reuse that material. So, and it becomes, you know, a financial burden to them. You know, that's kind of the disincentive is they're responsible for the costs associated with that. The positive on that is they're responsible and they can make those design changes. They have the power to do that.
Yeah, and just to clarify for your listeners, Sheena, too, what this will mean to them, what extended producer responsibility will mean to them, it will be rolled out in the next 2 to 3 years. So the legislation came into effect November 30th of last year of 2022, and it just passes that responsibility from the municipalities that are currently managing it. And you know, if you think about it, municipalities, as we said earlier, have literally no control over what's getting put into the economic stream at all, right? They're just dealing with what comes out of it. So it's transitioning that responsibility to producers, and they will be required to have a full system in place by 2025. And so really the consumers or the residents of Alberta's Industrial Heartland shouldn't see many changes. They are required to implement the system at the current level to what already exists. But going forward, I think the goal or the thought is that we will see improvements, and we'll see improvements on the front end. So there's consistency across the province about what's accepted where and how consumers or residents can prepare that material and participate with the programs. And it'll develop those economies of scale and that consistency and volumes of what's received across the province as well on the back end of the recycling system. So that's just something for your listeners that may be of interest to them. And so right now that legislation is just for what we call packaging and paper products. So basically just your blue box materials. We hope that Alberta will follow other provinces and move towards other sectors, other types of materials. So industrial, commercial, institutional has historically, in Alberta's waste and recycling numbers, been about 70% of the material. 30% is generally residential, 70% is from that industrial sector. So, you know, if we can move to capture materials from ICI, our groups and organizations are advocating for a permanent program for agricultural plastics that would be similar, an EPR program for the materials Dan mentioned for grain bags and twine, and then potentially some other agricultural plastics. It just sets that system in place, that program in place, to create the financial and logistical sustainability that it needs to carry it into the future.
Thanks for clarifying some pieces on the EPR there, Tammy and Dan. And it sounds like it's a great first step to working towards that consistency. But like you said, it's not applicable yet, as I anticipate it probably will be down the line to other sectors. But I imagine that some of these other sectors, like these industrial and commercial, they are working on some different processes, maybe on their own, or there's new innovation happening. And I'm thinking specifically about possibly what's happening within Alberta and Alberta's industrial heartland, and in the petrochemical sector, for example. I know a lot of them have a focus on pieces like this and circular economy and kind of upcycling those plastics and creating better quality plastics that are easier to be recycled. Do you have anything to add on that note?
We did a study in 2021 on the plastics generation of businesses in the industrial heartland. And what we found actually surprised us, that there were not that many plastics being generated from those businesses. So that was 25 different facilities of different sizes and operational types. But most of it was streamed similar to kind of household or residential recyclables and waste. Most of the industrial processes, as you say, were being captured through reuse or recycling programs, things like that. So it was sort of the first of its kind study to take a look at what opportunities there might be. But I think it is an indication that there's some of that work already being done, as you say, by those leaders in the province and maybe other areas for future focus going forward, other than that industrial sector specifically in your region. But it was good to have the data nonetheless in terms of informing us for opportunities. And we were able to create a characterization guide for any businesses or companies interested in doing similar study within their organization. There's a sort of a template or a plan you can follow to assess the plastics generation.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a really great willingness by the parties and by these companies to really do their part and, you know, be responsible as to what they're doing and the products they're creating and their impact on the environment. Dan, did you have anything to add on that note of what's happening kind of in the sector and around the industrial heartland area?
Yeah, I think with or without EPR is going to help. And as it moves into the IC&I sector, I think that will increase the opportunities. What we have seen is that we get a lot of phone calls, can you recycle this plastic and can you recycle that? And we're starting to experiment and to pilot and add other plastics. And in doing that, we found a big uptake on different companies. For example, the greenhouse growers, which I know there's a number of in your area, we can now recycle their cover plastics. And we're looking at some of their other films as well. We're looking at some bagging facilities. So some of the players that use polyethylene bags, some garden centers, some Scotts Canada type guys and Premier Tech and all those that recycle either a mulch or anything that's bagged that you see in the large retail outlets. We've not gone to the residential or the retail side, but we're looking at more at the wholesale side or the manufacturing side and diverting those plastics that, and we're able to do that. There has to be a better collection system and consistency across and some incentive or disincentive to kind of further encourage that. And I think EPR eventually will get there. I don't think there's any huge appetite to do it in the next 2 years from the government. EPR is seen as a residential solution or a residential program initially, and there will be some movement. I think you're going to see a lot of movement by the businesses in anticipation of a government intervention or government involvement. So you're starting to see more business-to-business stuff happening because the writing's on the wall.
Right. Thanks so much for explaining that and sharing with us. I know that's something I even think about a lot just in my day-to-day life of kind of recycling and what I can recycle and what I can't and what that means. And especially around items like the single-use plastics, that's such a huge topic of conversation today. And we're all kind of learning about it as we go. So before we wrap up today, is there anything else that either of you wanted to add just to this conversation that's such a hot topic today?
Well, I'll just say thanks for having me on, Sheena, and for being willing to chat with Dan and I about this. I think, I could talk about this. We could do like a 3-hour podcast. I'm not sure people would zone out, but I do love talking about this and helping educate people on the topic. If people are interested in hearing more stories of examples of circularity, we do have some on our website, www.albertaplasticsrecycling.com. And we have a story about Dan's work and his project to recycle egg films with Berry Global. That's another one of our members. So it's all within a 200-kilometer radius within central Alberta that they're working to remanufacture that back into new agricultural plastics. So it's a great success story. And another member, Styro Go, that is looking at expanding styrofoam recycling and, again, trying to build local markets for that material and track and trace their plastic into being the products it's being remanufactured into. So think there's a lot of work that we can do, as we touched on, but I think there's a lot of exciting things happening right now as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Dan. And thanks, Tammy. You've mentioned today a lot about how education and awareness is a really big part of this. And I know I learned a lot today in our conversation, as I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot as well. So thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to hear about all the progress that's being made to help create more of a circular economy and close that loop. So thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Sheena.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to In the Zone. Stream us wherever you find your podcasts and on our website, lifeintheheartland.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn for up-to-date information on events and activities. Subscribe to our online newsletter for more information about industry operations in the region. This podcast is brought to you by Life in the Heartland, a partnership of four local organizations providing a collaborative approach to improving community awareness on projects and development in Alberta's industrial heartland.